been listening to this music all day long. Of course, that's Killer Joe, a classic written by Benny Golson. And although it was originally written in 1954, it was first recorded for his Meet the Jazz Tet album in 1960. Art Farmer on trumpet opens up, and we have Benny Golson on tenor sax, Curtis Fuller on trombone, McCoy Tyner on piano, Addison Farmer on bass, and Lex Humphreys on drums. This is from, as I said, the Meet the Jazz Tet album, and it still remains one of Golson's. Golson has a whole set of jazz classics. You ought to get to know his music. Really extraordinary orchestration and a really thorough musicologist and musician. This is Lead Stories. I'm Utrice Lead. It is Free Your Mind Friday. This is supposing that our minds, we still have them. They've been so battered lately, we have to do a check to figure out if we still have our minds. But first, let me make a plug here in my own behalf. On Sunday, I want you to mark your calendars. Sunday, March 11 at 1:30 p.m., I'll be giving a little talk at the Community Church of New York, 40 East 35th Street off of Park Avenue. I've been invited by the International Committee of the Church. I consider it a great honor to be asked. And more than that, it would be just sheer joy to see your face, to shake your hand, to give you a hug. All of that good stuff, because it's what I'm about, really, building community and reaching out to people. And, of course, people reaching back. It's the one thing that has driven my career, if I might use that word, these past 44 years. So I'm looking forward to seeing you and looking forward for us having a little fellowship, if you will, just meeting and greeting and saying hello. All right, again, that's Sunday, March the 11th at 1:30 p.m. at the Community Church of New York. That's at 40 East 35th Street off of Park Avenue. Okay, so let's get to what's on your mind. What has transpired this week that really, you feel a need to get off your chest? It is the time to do that. This is our weekly forum, and listeners and callers take the conversation wherever they wish it to go. You're in charge. You decide what is important to share and what you would want to contribute to our general reservoir of information by way of instruction. Your call is instruction. We're teaching each other here. And this is the point of this program. Your opinions are not just, you know, a kind of side or incidental thing on the show. It is the show. What you're thinking is actually the show. And I wouldn't have it any other way. 888-874-4888 is the number to call. And let's get started with Marie from Baltimore. You're on the air.
Good afternoon, Utrice. How are you doing? I got your name straight. I'm going to make sure I'm going to have your name correct. But
I noticed that. So it gave me a little chuckle.
I don't mind. And you bring up such interesting topics, things that people can connect with. In reference, yesterday you brought up about Women's History Month and about white women are at war with white men. I would agree with that. I witnessed that someplace. I'm not going in detail. But I have had problems, and I don't want to be called a racist, with white married Jewish women. And I've had dealings that were nice, but these dealings were classroom and on the job. I'm not going into detail about it. And these women were not supervisors or anything like that, but they want to have power and control over the African Americans. And so they, to me, have been a problem. As I said, these two incidents happened years ago. And I think that it will continue with the kind of government that we have today. And these were Jewish women. I think I did say that. So that's all I have to say. And I, as again say, I am not a racist. So that's all I have to say. You, Trish, and you have a lovely day.
Okay. Well, thank you. You told us what you're not going to tell us. So we have very little to go on besides your synopsis. So I thank you for calling and contributing and getting us started today. 888-874-4888. Oh, I'm sorry, Marie, did I cut you off? Oh, she's gone. Harvey from Berkeley, you're on the air.
Hello, wonderful Utrees.
Hey, wonderful Harvey. How's about you?
Well, we all love and appreciate you for your more than intelligent thoughts and teachings, and keep on keeping on there. Well, today, I've always talking about turning our sunlight into electricity by covering our nation's rooftops with solar electric roof panels and solar electric shingles, but today I'd like to talk about turning sound into clean renewable energy by using piezoelectric, which means pressure to electricity, sonic panels instead of solar panels. And for example, there's a lot of different kind of microphones that broadcasters like yourself use, and some of them are called piezoelectric microphones, and these are tiny piezoelectric, pressure to electricity, crystals inside of the microphone that when you speak into the mic, it turns the pressure of your sound waves directly into an electrical current, which is amplified and transmitted to your listeners. And these piezoelectric, they can be made into large sheets of piezoelectric material, and I call them, they could be mounted like solar panels, and I call them sonic panels, and that'll turn ambient sound from noisy places into clean, renewable electricity. They could cover highways and freeways where they use noise barriers and walls. They can place sonic panels on these walls and turn that the noise of all that traffic directly into electricity. And really noisy airports and airport hangar rooftops can easily generate a lot of sonic electricity. Sports stadiums and arenas used for sporting events and concerts generate a lot of noise, and that could be turned directly by piezoelectric sonic panels into clean renewable energy, as well as construction sites, noisy construction sites, manufacturing sites, sonic panels on the ceilings of noisy rooms, like the cafe I go to. The place is always booming with people talking there, and all that electricity could be turned noise could be turned into electricity. High-rise exteriors located on busy streets. So those are some of the ideas of places that we could use sonic panels. And so this is another form of clean renewable energy, sound waves, that can be turned directly by the use of piezoelectric material into electricity. And so I say, let's take advantage of another renewable energy that doesn't use fossil fuels that are killing our planet and destroying our world.
So where is this technology currently operating?
Well, it's currently for instance, like you have touch screens on banks and on like handheld computers. When you tap your little cell phone, or when you tap your tellers on the automatic tellers on bank touch screens, that's piezoelectricity, and that sends a small current. The pressure of your finger hitting the screen sends a small pressure, sends a small current, and that is used to tell what you want. You know, it's located, that current is directly located on a certain portion of the screen, and it's sort of like a little button, a pressure button, you might say, that translates, when you tap it, translates into electricity, and then it tells the computer what you want it to do. And also, they've created piezoelectric rooftops where the pressure of raindrops falling on this piezoelectric material on rooftops, the pressure of the raindrops generates electricity. It's like millions of little fingers tapping away. And so it's already being used every day by millions and billions of people, piezoelectric transparent screens on their cell phones and on their teller machines. So I say that it can also use the pressure of sound waves. In fact, you can look it up on Google, put in piezoelectric sound, And you can read about like piezoelectric microphones like the one you might be using right now. So we already have the technology. It's already right there. You can Google. It's spelled P-I-E-Z-O electric, like Pi Z-O electric. And read about it. And I think piezoelectric sonic panels could be, we could tap into a tremendous amount of sound in our society, as well as the sun with photovoltaics, and turn a lot of that sound directly into clean, renewable energy.
Oh, very fascinating. Thank you.
Thank you.
E from Edgewater, you're on the air.
Hi, Eutrice.
Hello. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm just calling in. The caller, Willie, he called yesterday. But about a month ago on Free Your Mind Friday, he had called the last caller, and his phone had some reverb, and you was unable to hear him too well. And he was asking about one of our family callers who used to call him regularly, and her name was Desiree, or the name is Desiree. Do you remember her?
Yes, I know the name. I'm familiar with the fact that she has called the show a couple of times.
Well, she used to call regularly, and she had a very compassionate, sweet voice, very
Yes.
So he was asking you that was the name he was trying to say.
Oh,
and I
see.
Was able
okay.
To, I heard him, and I was also wondering what had happened because I didn't hear her calling for a while, and I'm sure other people who were used to hearing her call was wondering also. I had been listened to a lot of shows on PRN because they all have something important to say, and you can get a lot of great information on all the shows on this great station, PRN. But it was the show on Tuesday called Nature Bats Last. Are you familiar with that one?
Excuse me. No, I didn't listen to that.
No, but the show, it's called Nature Bats Last on Tuesday. It comes on, I think, from 3
right.
to 4.
I thought you were mentioning a specific show a specific episode of the show, I mean.
Yeah, well, that would be having to go back about a year now because it's been about, time goes so fast. This was like a month ago when Willie was asking, and it only seems like a few days, but it went by so fast. But I had been listening to the show that day, Nature Bats Last. A lot of times it's taped, but this was a live show and they were taking calls. And Desiree called into the show because there was a man who had a organic farm out in Idaho or somewhere out there in the West. And he was looking for people to come help him work the farm. And in return, he'd give them a piece of land that they can work on. He was looking for couples. So Desiree was interested and she called in. And then that was the last time I heard her call our show here, and maybe that she was selected to go out there, and that would clear it up for Willie and the rest of us that she probably found her place in the sun, and I was glad that something good could happen for somebody who was so concerned for humanity that you could hear it in her voice. And I wish you would call back and tell us how she's doing. But I just wanted to clear that up for Willie if he's listening and for the other callers.
Thank you. I'm sure he appreciates that as well. Thanks so much for your call
today. All right.
Today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. All right. 888-874-4888. I'm curious, what are you thinking about the week's events? Anything that grabs you and troubles you? Or anything you'd like to comment about what has happened this past week and the week before that you didn't get said yet? 888-874-4888. You know, the whole point of a program like this, where people just talk and communicate and connect with each other, as we just witnessed with E from Edgewater, this is really, I think, what radio is uniquely, and in some cases too, the new technology, but it's uniquely able to do, which is to be current and to have people cross-pollinate ideas. So that is very, very, a very good use of this technology. And this is why this program, you know, Free Your Mind, it's about doing just that. What if you were part of a group that met regularly and just discussed things? This is how communities are formed. This is community work. So I take great pleasure in opening the phone lines as much as possible in regular programs that I do, but specifically to set aside time so that people can express themselves and bring our attention to issues that matter. Speaking of Willie E., here he is from Brooklyn. You're on the air.
Speaking of the devil. You see? I'm sorry, uterus. Patrice, whatever. But we love and respect you. That's the most important. In my judgment, right? I think the two most important things anyone could give to anyone is, number one, respect. Number two is information. The reason, information, what you don't know can kill you. Now, I'm so angry with my family, PRN family, because we're not the voice of this nation. I'm not mad at Trump or any of these people. They're doing what they want to do. The CNN and the ABC and all that stuff. I'm angry with my family because there's no reason why we should not be the voice of this nation and the world. You know, because there are so many honorable, decent reporters that are in the so-called mainstream media. I don't know what's mainstream about that. But they would love to be a part of PRN, just like the family we have there. If we had the money, don't you think they would be here? Don't you think this would grow much better? There are so many, many more people, honorable, decent people, like the ones within PRN. And we are the problem. Not nobody else. It is we, because we have the information. You see? Now, let me say one more thing that's been bugging me. Oh, the question is the Mr. Farrakhan's question. I mean, I go to bed angry. I wake up angry. The way he's treated by a certain people. You see, look. This is an insult to black people all over the world. Because here's a man that has worked 64 years of his life and put his life on the line on a daily basis. And
but what is the insult? What is the insult?
The new black Hitler. In the Daily News, they had a cartoon of two guys, a bunch of doctors, and two of them as a chainsaw. Remember a couple of years ago, he had prostate cancer. Now, that is an insult to all of us, in my judgment. An attack on him is an attack on all black people. That's how I see it. An attack on you, just like they did. Remember, a couple of years ago, remember, I was one of them at the station. Not to defend you, but to die. An attack on you to lead is an attack on all of us. And until we begin to respect ourselves and our one another, these attacks from all kinds of people, it has to stop.
When did the Daily News do this?
A couple of years ago. Maybe if you Google it, you could see it. But you know how they talked about him, Michael Jackson, all every one of them. Every one of them that stand in front of us with information, Dr. Ben.
Here's the thing, and I keep going back to this stuff. We cannot expect, really, if we understand the circumstances in which we live, we cannot expect the apparatus of control and government to be kind and to be accommodating to us. That's not. They're very clear. They are very clear about what their mission is. When people, if you say people, I mean, this was an insult. Well, apparently not enough people felt that way. But I'll tell you again. Here's something they ought to know. The Daily News on a weekend, just on newspaper sales alone, will get at least $1 million of newsstand sales. Now, if people decided we're not buying a paper that insults someone we respect, you could see how quickly they will realize that they've made a wrong choice. If they're not confronted with the content, the editorial content, by people who have scientifically analyzed it. This was the point I made. In fact, I'm credited, was credited, for getting started a group in Queens.
CIMOTAP.
Because yes. I went out to speak, and there was just the whole discussion was about what the media is doing wrong.
Right.
I said, forget that. What are you doing? And I laid out a plan. I said, these are the things that they respect. When you go talking things about, well, they ought to do this and they ought to do that. No.
Right.
When they understand that you are serious and you are prepared to deal a very serious blow to their revenues, they wake up instantly and they know how to behave instantly. And that's what they did. They confronted ABC and they were able to show how ABC routinely ignored very important issues in the black community and the Latino community too. But if people don't scientifically organize their opposition, then we're just spitting in the wind. The Daily News does this because it can get away with it. Look, 1 year, the year that 8 black reporters and editors of the Daily News were suing the Daily News for racial discrimination and denial of promotion within the ranks, the editorial room, that same year, that very year, I went to the National Association of Black Journalists convention, which was being held in Manhattan at the time. Two things were amazing to me. The first booth, it was huge, you couldn't avoid it. The first booth out of the elevator heading toward the seminars and so forth was a booth from by the CIA. recruiting black journalists. I called the president of the, getting a lot of reverb here, I called the president. I went to see him directly.
Yeah, I'm here.
Getting so much noise. We can't hear each other. But anyway, there's a big booth recruiting. The CIA is recruiting black journalists at their own convention. And then at that, the finale, there was a dinner, and the Daily News president was presented with an award. The same year that 8 black journalists were hung out to dry, this is what they did. So you have people working against the interests. I mean, I confronted them. I put the picture smack there on the front page, let everybody see. And they had black journalists and the Latino journalists too, who supposedly was a union representative, who were both prepared to testify in support of the Daily News racist management, that there was no discrimination, none whatsoever, at the Daily News. So you see, we contradict our own positions when we don't deal with people who should have been advocates and who should have helped, but they chose not to. They were totally bought and paid for. And by the way, the dinner that year was paid for by the Daily News. This is why I don't belong to the journalist group. David from Brooklyn, you're on the air.
Good afternoon, Eugene. I want to tell the family, all roads lead to the community church, 11 March, that's a Sunday. And we're looking forward to everybody coming in from everywhere. I'd love to see Harvey and people like that and people coming from Canada, as well as all the nearby states, to come to Community Church at 40 East 35th Street. That is between Park Avenue and Madison Avenue in Manhattan, New York City. And that would be a wonderful time. This is a wonderful event. This is a tremendous thing where we'll get to meet and greet each other. Okay. The other thing I want to say is this. If there is one important thing that could be said at this point, and I'm going to be redundant about this because I feel that's one of my successes in training people, is being redundant. And that means, in this case, we have to learn how the system works. And by doing that, we'll understand how they are able to control so many people, even though they have a relatively small amount. And people have to learn to do the system and do a system analysis. That's the most important thing that people have to do. And I say that because they're not going to teach you that in the schools. They're not going to teach you how they are able to control a country that has 330 million people, a small group of people, do that. And we have to learn that. So that's why I say the most important thing I want to leave today is let's learn how to do a system analysis.
All right. I agree. I agree wholeheartedly with that. Because systems, in the end, everything that controls our lives is one system or another. And we have to understand how important it is, because it's a scientific way of operating. You're not leaving things to chance. You're seeking answers to all the little bits and pieces, all the elements. And so you cannot easily be manipulated or fooled. Thank you, David, for your call. Jeff,
thank you very
from New Jersey,
much.
You're on the air.
Well, how are you today?
Okay,
hey,
how about you?
Well, I'm hanging in there, hanging in there. And I'm glad it's Free Your Mind Friday.
I'm telling you.
All right, well, you will. I have a couple of things to say, and I didn't get a chance to call the last couple of weeks because we were talking about the Black Panther movie and so on and so forth. And me as a comic book reader when I was young, the significance of the comic books and the mutants in the comic books, and specifically like the X-Men comics. Now, Professor X is based on Martin Luther King. His counterpart, his friend, but yet his foe, Magneto, is based on Malcolm X. The whole mutant community was based on minorities, and the way that they were treated, where they would save the world but still be ostracized by humans, is like the black soldiers who were in World War II and fighting and freeing people, yet coming home and being lynched in the facing racial prejudice. And that was significant for us when we were young, because we identified with the dark characters. There's one called the Beast. He was purple. And that's who we identified with. We identified with the Incredible Hulk, because he was green. He was another color. He wasn't white. He's a non-white superhero. So when the Black Panther came along, he became, part of our identity, him and Luke Cage, Power Man. All right, so there were two black heroes that were there that kind of, broke in. The significance of the movie is not so much parallel with the Black Panthers, but that it was a representation of finally, and I'm looking at movies, I look at movies critically anyway when it comes to black and white, there's never a black hero, never a black hero that gets the woman. You can go back and look at all the films. And even in Marvel's Avengers, they kind of punked the two black heroes. They end up being, they have some lines in there that are just not, they're not manly. I'm not saying they're gay, but I'm just saying that they kind of shied away from battle, in their work. So the significance of this guy who comes in, and he's actually, in all of the Marvel heroes, he's the best fighter. And that's significant because it shows, remember watching Bill Cosby, for instance, in I Spy with his counterpart. And watching them give his white counterpart more action than Bill Cosby. And Bill Cosby had to be saved a couple times by, when these two were fighting other spies and whatnot. He comes and saves Bill Cosby, never the other way around. And so the significance of a black lead holding his own, especially in an action movie, is kind of significant. Now, not taking away and not giving anything to Disney, because I think the hue of the women in the Black Panther movie is all wrong. And I think that what they did to some of the other black superheroes, like Halle Berry's character Storm, who in the comics was actually the second in charge. It wasn't a Wolverine thing. It wasn't a Hugh Jackman character. It was her who was the glue, and she was just ice cold. She's Mother Nature. That's significant because she was one that controlled the element, basically saying, "And we come from Mother Nature." So she was a lead, and she was also the Black Panther's girlfriend in the early comics. She was his girlfriend in Africa. So there's some things in it, and I'm not going to, I understand, you know, they're releasing it during Black History Month, and that's the marketing, you know, that's the marketing part of it. And yeah, I think that's kind of BS. But there is a significance there with comics. Comics taught us when we were young to accept everybody and that you don't know everyone's circumstance. I think Stan Lee and Marvel deserve that credit. What you're seeing in the movies now is part Disney and, you know, how you know how they operate. You know, everything.
But you see, here's the thing that we need to consider. And we're talking here now as people with some degree of a political understanding. What is normal in the white world is not normal in our world. We do not share the same history. We may share similar experiences, but we do not have a common history. And while a whole genre was developed to entertain children, white children in the United States, it also was inculcating a sense of who was important and who is not, who is supreme and who is not, who has extra powers and who does not. And the messages were carefully honed so as to not disturb the pattern of things. It's not about bringing people together. That was never the image of the comic books.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, with the X-Men, that was pretty much what we Fantastic Four. You don't find that DC Comics. You don't find that. The only comics that you found it in was the X-Men, because they dealt with mutants, and mutants were all colors and all hues, and you know that was our pretty much our comics of choice, because we could identify with the circumstances that the mutants were put into. And again, they weren't.
But listen to what you just said. I want to repeat what you just said, which is proof that this was not an unintentional thing. Your heroes growing up in the comic books were called mutants.
Yeah.
Mutants. And those were the people that you were to direct your attention to and support, and pretty much, as you just said, you identified with them. You think that's incidental?
Oh, no, not at all. I think it was very purposeful.
When a body of information is mass-produced, they already know who they're targeting and why, and they also know what they are supposed to do, which is to, of course, you're a young kid. Why should you be identified with the mutants? Why should you be called? Why should that be an acceptable term for identity?
Well, actually, the mutants were the most powerful beings on Earth.
Well, they became
the superheroes, and they were the most powerful beings on Earth, and they saved Earth, and they battled evil and got no credit and got no and was despised.
Yeah, but they were mutants.
And that was for us because I grew up at the time when Superman was still on TV. Superman and Batman. And just was not. I mean, when Kato came on with the Green Hornet, Bruce Lee, that was the only time we could be, you know, we identified with Kato. You know, because we say, hey, man, that's...
identified with Kato. Because that was his purpose. That's why he was created. Look, there's a thing, when they conceive these ideas, it's not out of the blue. This current movie, the Black Panther, the center of it, it's not even the content, but the center of it is about establishing an unbeatable monopoly over a segment of the market that will, from this point on, they could consider loyal supporters of this genre. The industry was shutting down. They needed to find new ways of marketing their products. They had by necessity to open up a little bit.
Oh, yeah.
And even so, they did it stereotypically. But this is the whole point. This is not unintentional entertainment. This is directly aimed at your brain growing up as a little boy and my brain growing up as a little girl. These are not unintentional things. And we're seeing a blatant expression of it now.
Oh, yeah.
Because the industry is in such trouble, the only people who could save it, even from itself, are the markets that they absolutely ignored. So yeah. Now they have to let in a black producer or black high level, but they were rented. Well, they don't own any points in this.
There was a Eddie Griffin made a very, very valid point in one of his the interview he did. And he said, listen, they built networks backs on black people. They had all black shows. When you had Channel 11, or you changed to UPN, all black shows. Fox started out with black shows. And then once they did that, they just kind of threw that market away. Yeah. And so, yes, I agree. But I also, have a, little different view. But I agree with what you're saying.
I understand what you're saying, too, because you're giving a point of view of somebody. I mean, you're not an innocent bystander. You were involved. You were a part of the targeted market. And it worked well because it deeply impressed upon you something akin to values. You know, even though your heroes were called mutants, you projected a larger importance, a larger significance on these characters than perhaps they was intended. Because you saw them, they're saving the universe, they have special powers, they're not white. These things are not incidental or accidental.
No, I agree. One more thing, and you talked about history, and I want to lay something out real quick, perhaps for Black History Month, and what we need to do to make it of significance and to carry on throughout the year. And that is to create, like you mentioned, with the Jewish boys who go through their bat mitzvah, bar mitzvah, and the girls go through their bat mitzvah, and then they make their claim to what they're going to do for their society, for their culture. But something like that needs to happen. Now, I would propose that we make it's 4 weeks in February, that we make each week something. And one, the first week, is that we are first people. Our melanin lets us know that we were here longest. And if you read the Bible, that's, if you're going to read the Bible and creation and, so on and so forth, that's what it says. We're here first, before Adam and Eve, because Adam's sons went down and made it with the daughters of men. And who were those men? But the black man. 25,000 years before there was a Hamlet in Europe, we had dynasties in Egypt. And dynasties came from the Kenyans and the Nigerians who came down the river, down the Nile, to Lower Egypt. And then they married the two. But in that first week, we should eat from the land. Just changing our bodies and our diets. Right? We go back to eating natural foods. And maybe
people have laid out for us, okay? There are so many instructions, all kinds of instructions, all kinds of approaches have been laid out. We're not paying attention to any of them.
Well, that I believe we start in both the church and our social organization. And we have teachers who are willing to teach history. We have teachers who are willing to do things. We have people who are willing to do these things. We just need to have a forum, and we need to have an apparatus. That apparatus can be the church, you know, or it can be a Masonic temple, or it can be an Elks Lodge where, you know what, Saturday mornings we're going to do African history. Come down, invite your students. If the teacher's going to teach, invite the students. The members of the lodge, invite their nieces, nephews, sons, and daughters. And it starts with that small group, but once, you know, when they go back out into the community and begin to repeat the knowledge that they learn, people become interested, you know, and young people become interested in their history. Because I tell you, the angriest I've ever been was my first year in college. I took Black history and began to understand and see the contributions of Black people to this country, that for 4 years of high school, all they told us was that we were slaves. There was Frederick Douglass, W.E.B. Du Bois, Booker T. Washington, Malcolm X, not even barely Malcolm X, and Martin Luther King. And that's all we accomplished in this country. And white kids sitting next to me grew up getting the same lousy bit of information. But when we went to college, and there's a whole class of Black kids taking Black history, we were all angry because we grew up being undignified because of the history that they taught us that we were, and not telling us what we really did in this country. You know, the senators, the Black people, there were more Black people in Congress, in the Senate, after Reconstruction than ever.
Uh-huh.
And they accomplished things, and they did things, and they made us believe this lie that Black people cannot work together to build anything. Well, who built the churches? Who built the Masonic lodges? Who built the Elks lodges and maintained them all this time? We have built institutions, and they burned them down. And that was
well, of course. The thing that gets to me is, it's not as if the information isn't there. It is not as if people aren't making an effort to bring the community as a whole into a deeper understanding of itself. It's just that it's not happening.
Well, that's where we've reached
the point where Black History Month is, you know, social events and, you know, people doing some drumming and basically, I don't know what their thinking is about Black History Month.
It's a celebration, and it's not because even most citizens in this country, most kids coming up nowadays, don't know American history, period. Not even the lousy crap they taught. They're not learning a history. They're getting brief abbreviations of stuff, and they don't understand the Constitution. You know, if you ask in general history, these kids now, these millennials and younger, they have no idea. And that also parallels in with Black history. Yes, what we need to do, not worry about that, and go ahead and teach. You know,
exactly.
Go ahead and teach
my
and play
point.
Dr. Ben and these things. So, again, I mean, it was the D.C. teachers did a Black Lives Matter thing where they taught a little more curriculum about African-American studies, and they taught different subjects and opened it up. And they did this thing, I guess, in a week, and they had some other people come from, I guess, other places and witnesses. But there's a group now that's doing something. We just need to duplicate that. You know, there's a lot of stuff on the Internet where people are talking history, and people follow them. But, of course, you know, just like 80,000 people that marched in North Carolina for voting rights, there's no coverage. Not by any major media outlet. So, again, we need to go back to our newspapers. If you go back to the places where we communicate, barbershops, beauty shops, churches, before and after services, you know, but this is the job of those who are in the know. And it's going to be a tiresome, bothersome effort. It's going to be pulling teeth. But it's like I believe you believe. It is absolutely necessary for our survival.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for your call today. Very illuminating, and I thank you for contributing. Lincoln from Westchester, you're on the air, and let me tell you right up front, we're tight with time.
Okay, you choose. Okay. Hello, how are you?
Okay, how are you doing?
I'm persevering as usual. There's two things I want to say. One is concerning your health. I want to make a recommendation. And I thought about you a couple of times. I'm good. And then I want to say something quickly about a movie, a black movie. I am into juice therapy. I've been doing this for over 20 years. And I've experimented. And there's a great juice book by a guy named Dr. Walker. I was introduced to that book about back in the 80s. And I did all kinds of experiments, and I made all kinds of accomplishments. Like, for example, juice therapy worked, but most people don't get the value of it because they don't use it the right way. And the way for juice therapy to be successful is for you to inundate your body with it. I mean, excessively. Like, for example, when I get the cold or a flu, I can get rid of a flu or a cold in 36 hours, sometimes 24 hours. And what I do is I juice like about 10 times for the day. I mean, just nonstop, 16 ounces each time. And sometimes I do 32 ounces each, but I do this every hour, sometimes even every 45 minutes. And I did the same thing. There's a guy I knew who was suffering from diabetes, and I recommended to him a juice formula, and I told him to do it similar to how I did it. I don't think he did that many. He did it about four or five times. And he actually was getting insulin shots. This guy owns a restaurant. He's a Jamaican guy. And I met him at a gym once, you know. So next time I saw him, I asked him, how is he doing? He told me, he said, hey, man, after 2 weeks, he stopped taking his insulin shots. And I got to the point where he was so ecstatic about it that I don't go to his restaurants anymore because he don't want to charge me. Every time I show up and if I order something, he said, no, man. You know, he said, what you did for me, I could never pay you back, you know. And, okay, I'm running. So I'm going to tell you, these two formulas, 6 ounces of spinach to 10 ounces of carrot juice. If you do that four or five times a day, and the other formula is 16 ounces of carrot juice plain. Those two formulas attack any kind of cancer, but you have to do it four, five, six times a day and fast one day of the week. One day of the week you go without food. And if you do anything, just drink some distilled water. One day of the week and do that formula, 6 ounces of spinach to 10 ounces of carrot juice. And you will be well in very, very soon. Okay, and the other formula is straight up 16 ounces of carrot juice. The last thing I want to say is about the Harlem Nights. The Harlem Nights with Eddie Murphy, Arsenio Hall, Richard Pryor, I think was one of the greatest black movies ever, but it received horrible criticism. And the reason why, because the black gangsters outdid the white gangsters. And the white critics could not digest that. And think about that, the Harlem Nights.
Yeah, I remember the Harlem Nights. I saw it.
But there were so many
negative images in that movie as well. I mean, life was about, you know, gangsterism. Yeah, I don't know that's a great theme necessarily. It was, quote, entertaining, unquote, because even one of my favorites was in there, Della Reese.
Right.
You have all kinds of ways to communicate a message. And because this was a general release movie, the idea was that, well, they took it for granted, blacks will go and see it. But then the white world also saw it. And all of the stereotypes that were packed into that movie as well. It didn't help things. Uh-oh, I hear the music, which means we've
got to go.
Okay,
another time.
Thank you again. Yes, thanks so much for calling, everyone. And we'll see each other on Monday. Stay tuned. Coming up next is Dr. Jack Rasmus. Always something to learn from Dr. Rasmus. And we will see each other on Monday. Thank you so much. So much.